Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, Tuesday Morning Show host, and I feel extremely excited to be with my guests this morning because I know them both and they're pretty good guys. It's the Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited, our president, Chip Corsi. Hi, Chip.
Hi, Julie.
Nice to see you this morning. And John Hastings, the VP. We've got the two top guys. Hi, John.
Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Nice to have you both here this morning. Well, we've got plenty of topics to talk about related to Trout Unlimited this morning, but I just want to shout out to you all for being underwriters of KRFY. Thank you. Thank you for supporting us, and we'll do our best to support you with getting your word out into the community.
Thank you.
Yes, good of call. Course. We have many things to talk about related to Trout Unlimited, but the reason that we're getting together on this day in February is to talk about a big event that happens just once per year in Sandpoint. It's the only fundraiser that Panhandle Chapter of Trout Unlimited does every year. And so having said that, would one of you like to tell us what that is?
Well, I'll start. And I'll let John fill in a lot of holes.
Probably. All right. But just a snippet, because we're going to hear about you, and then we'll come back.
Yeah. So the fundraiser is the Fly Fishing Festival Film Tour, or F3. And it's an annual event that we engage with the producers of that every year. It's new films every year. But if we have it here in Sandpoint, and it's a lot of fun. Get to see lots of pretty scenery and big fish.
It is, and so I'll just ask you to give the date and time, and then we're going to learn more about you two. When is it, and what time, where?
It is at the Panada Theater this Friday, February 27th. Doors open at 5:30, and want to be there early so that you can buy lots of raffle tickets and bid on silent auction items. And then the movies will get started promptly at 7.
Okay, you want to get early to get a good seat, too, so you can
correct,
get right
yes.
up in that movie.
Yep, it won't sell out, probably, but it'll come close. So to get a good seat, yes. you want to be there a little bit early.
Well, after this interview, it just might.
It's good point.
So
good.
Let's be optimistic, John.
I better buy my tickets.
That's right. Get out there and buy them. Panada.org. Hey, so even though we've had you both on here at KRFY in the past, you're not on every week or every day, so would you each take just a minute and tell us a bit about yourselves and how you came to be, one, in Sandpoint, and two, involved with Trout Unlimited.
Well, sure. My wife and I moved here about 30 years ago from Minnesota. And when people ask us why we moved, it was for the warm tropical climate. And coming from Minnesota, that's an accurate description.
It's true.
And we actually were looking for a lifestyle change when we met. We had both met when we were working in Glacier National Park. And I was a Park Service Ranger there for a couple seasons. And then I got a job out here teaching, and I taught for 20-some years at Sandpoint High. Environmental science, forestry, horticulture were the things that I was teaching. My wife and I, Nancy, we own All Seasons Garden Center. And so I retired from teaching, but my new boss is even harder than my old boss. So,
leaving you little time for volunteering, but you found some. You found Panhandle Trout Unlimited. And how did you come to be on the board?
One of those things, as I said, I mentioned I was teaching environmental science, so I'd always been involved in a lot of issues along that avenue, as well as I serve on other boards also in the same field and or same interests, I should say. So I was actually, quite honestly, more interested in the conservation work that Trout Unlimited does than necessarily just telling fishing stories, although I do like to fish, so...
Yes, you do. But yes, so you have the background and the education and realize that this was an organization where you could contribute.
Correct.
Very good. How about you, Chip? You have a wonderful background for your work, for your job here.
Well, I had a wonderful career. I enjoyed it. I spent 42 years working for the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, about 29 of those in the Panhandle, and I'm a fisheries biologist by training. I finished my career as a regional supervisor up here, so I got to work on all kinds of aspects of fish and game work, wildlife and fish and enforcement and information-related things. And my wife, Diane, is actually a Panhandle native. She grew up in Coeur d'Alene. And so it was a happy day when she got to move back up here.
And her ears don't have to be burning because she's quiet like a mouse in the studio with us. Hi, Diane. Thanks for joining us.
So I have a passion for fishing and a passion for rivers and lakes and streams. And I've been a TU member for quite some time anyway. And I figured now that I'm not working, I could still dabble in trying to make fishing better.
Yes, and it really seems like you have. For how long have you been president now? A couple of years?
I think this is the second year.
Yeah, it's great because
time flies.
But yeah. You're a new president, relatively new, and you've really offered a lot of interesting ideas to perk up that chapter. And listeners, I know that because I'm a member of Trout Unlimited and have been on the board too. So I run into him at a meeting from time to time.
Well, thanks for the kind words.
Of course.
John was on the ticket with me.
Yes, it made for a great ticket. Way to go, guys. That's very funny. All right. Well, should we move on and just dive right into what's happening with our big annual event? And then we'll come back around to what else is happening at Panhandle Chapter Trout Unlimited.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So we already briefly mentioned it's a series of films, some short, some long. They really take place all over the world, and some of them are fishing trips that the common man and woman could enjoy, and some of them probably not due to price tags, but it still is fun to see all these great adventures that people are going on rivers all around the planet. And
the question I have is, you'll come back to your thought, but the question I have is, I think they're always different each year, the little short films, but do you guys find out in advance what's going to be showing, or are you as surprised as the rest of us?
It's one of those things that we can look at there is a set show, and it is a national tour, and it's called, we're not the first place, so it is toured around, and when it comes here, but they determine, we don't pick the films for this, it's the national organization that picks the films for this, and it's used as a fundraiser for us, as well as other organizations will do the same thing.
We have a committee that puts this together, and a shout out to Laura Forsberg, who just went off the board, but has stayed active in helping to put this together. And I think she has a better idea than the rest of us. For most of us, it'll be just as much of a surprise as everybody else there. I'll add one thing on that is that you probably won't see people you know. But I know a few years ago when I attended, I was kind of surprised, and it was fun to see my daughter and son's high school English teacher featured in one of the films, Fishing in Russia. Yeah,
really? Yeah. That's amazing.
That is.
Wow.
So you never know.
You never know.
You never know who you might see. It's a small world.
Now, you may not run into friends and family that you know on watching the film, but you will run into people that you know if you come to the Panada, because it is it's well attended, and it's folks that love to get out and see films about the outdoors.
And it's very festive.
Yes,
it's just a fun time. Yeah,
it is a time. Yeah, a lot of people get together there. Maybe they haven't seen each other in a while, and of course, this time of year, they're starting to get excited about spring fishing and everything else that's going to come along with that. And a lot of people come for the prizes.
That's right. Yes.
And we have a very lively auctioneer too. And John.
Oh, John is auctioneer. Way to go, John.
We don't have a live auction. I have served in that function at other events, but not at this one. So there is a silent auction. We got some great trips. There's a number of float trips, guided fishing trips that have been donated, Linehan Outfitters.
Okay. And will that be on the Kootenai? Or
I believe that's on the Kootenai.
All right.
Yeah.
And another one.
Chip is offered to guide a little trip. Is that with Bob or two separate trips?
No, it's Bob Holman, who's a board member, and I have donated a trip for four, so two boats. And we have several rivers to choose from as long as there's enough water to float boats.
Right. As long as there will be enough water. Yeah. So listeners, if you bid on that trip, maybe get it scheduled early before things get too dried out next summer.
And we have a number of board members who have donated items. We have some fly rods. We'll have lots of flies. Some local businesses, iCarts has made donations. Fincognito has made donations. All Seasons Garden Center. North 40, the House of Fly at North 40 provides us quite a bit. And then the National Touring Organization that we contract with, they have a bunch of prizes from Yeti and Fly Time and a few other things too. So, and we're still getting more donations coming in. So there's a lot of raffle items and a lot of silent auction items, and some of them are pretty high value.
Yes. So there is no shortage of raffle and auction items then this year.
No, that's lots good. Of goodies. It should be fun.
All right. So for listeners, they will need to pay to watch the film. And that does part of that go to Trout Unlimited?
Yes, it does. And I mean, yeah, the other part about that is that, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Chip, I know, but in the past year, that if you purchase a ticket, then you're eligible to get a free membership.
Yes.
In Trout Unlimited, both locally and at the national level. And that's one of the main reasons I'm involved with Trout Unlimited is because of the work that the national office does. So it's good to be involved with them. What do they call it? They have a program called Priority Waters, where they spend hundreds of millions of dollars on habitat restoration. When you do it on habitat restoration, it not only makes it better for fishing, but it makes it better for everybody and everything that lives in and on and around that water.
Yes.
So and one of their priority waters is the Clark Fork watershed, so that a lot of their work is being done locally.
So the national is helping out Idaho. That's great.
Yes.
We're going to come back around to that after we've finished talking about this event, but we'll talk more about local versus national.
Yes. Another thing, too, that will be happening at this, of course, a priority for us as an organization is to try and raise some funds that we use for a lot of these on-the-ground projects that we're involved in. But the other thing is to get more members, both locally and nationally, but also get them more involved. So there will be at this event an opportunity for people to sign up for volunteer opportunities, which have been everything from just taking a field trip and looking at the quality of water. We did one last summer to the Priest River. We have done some tree planting projects up on the Bull River. There's one planned for near the Kootenai River this coming summer. So we're getting people signed up so they can get some boots on the ground and help improve habitat for cold water fish.
Yes, and when you get that free membership, then of course you're getting emails, you're getting newsletters, you're getting updated on what's happening.
You actually get the TU magazine, which is a nice magazine. So when you sign up, you become a TU member nationally, and you're assigned to your geographic chapter, which up here is the Panhandle. And I think to kind of add to what John said is that we have also put a little bit of money into scholarships for graduate students looking to start careers in fisheries management and conservation. So we're trying to spread it around a little bit. We don't raise tons of money, but we have an education program that we work with that's funded largely through Avista. So this helps with that also. There's just a lot of good things we can do, and we're trying to figure out how to increase our ability to put dollars on the ground and leverage those dollars to do more conservation work. And like John said, not just make it better for fish, but make it better for everybody.
Right. Animals and plants and fish and people. It all helps when the cold water fisheries are working properly. Yeah. So the other things happening during the film festival are a lot of camaraderie, correct? And talking with other fellow environmentalists and fishermen.
And quite often enjoying those conversations over a cold, frosty beer. That's always a part of it.
Glad you pointed that out. Because
conservation conversation.
That's it.
Lots of that.
And beer.
And beer.
That's good. And wine.
And then just to remind folks again that the tickets can be purchased at panada.org, that online. And I think that ticket then ends up being done through Event. It's called Event Master or Events Online, or I don't remember the exact format that they're using, but go to panada.org and you can buy tickets there. Or there are tickets available at North 40, House of Fly, if you're going out there to pick up a few flies or anything.
Very good. And is it a little less expensive if you get them in advance or not?
No, I believe it's the same. Yeah, okay. It's the same.
No problem. So if it doesn't sell out, people could get them at the door, but why not take care of things in advance?
Pretty darn easy to go online, click buy them, and then you're on your phone or whatever you've got. And so you just,
that's the easy way.
Except for us anti-techies who like to have a piece of paper in our hands.
Are you one of those guys that
I'm
only,
a Luddite, yes.
And you only use cash too, I suppose.
So let me ask Chip a question. So Chip, my fishing license is on my phone. Is your fishing license on your phone?
No.
All right. We see where
this
is going.
Just curious. Curious.
Well, Chip may not have his license on his phone, but that doesn't make him inept in areas of helping forward the conservation of cold water fisheries, because you're one of our biggest letter writers and that we've ever had, I think, on the board. And tell us why you do that, Chip.
I guess I saw an opportunity for us to engage more in conservation on the front where, whether it's proposed legislation or proposed changes to regulations or proposed projects that are administered by, could be the state or the county or a federal agency, that they're seeking input on potential impacts and benefits and how to make things better. And so as a chapter, we've decided to, as a board, we've decided to start weighing in on those. And so we try to send letters that if something looks like it's going to have a negative impact on fisheries, we point that out. We try to find alternatives that would have less of an impact and or find mitigation strategies that could actually be beneficial. And, sometimes we get to weigh in on something that's like, yeah, go, because that's a really good conservation project. But there's just a lot going on, and it's not just stuff that's happening like across the state line in Montana can affect us because, or up in BC can affect us because the Kootenai watershed flows out of BC into Montana, into Idaho, and the Clark Fork watershed flows out of Montana into Idaho. And so we've engaged with things like water quality regulation proposals that are out there to recommend things that the science, and we try to do everything from a science-based perspective, that the science supports trying to maintain water quality at a level that's going to support these cold water fisheries.
For sure.
Well, listeners, you're hearing us moving a little bit away from the event and into the things that Trout Unlimited is doing throughout the year, not just for the annual event. And so we're going to begin talking about things like the initiatives that this local chapter jumps into, and also what the national is doing. So we're going to go ahead and just take a big look, and a big look at national versus local, and then talk about more events, et cetera. Now, John, you had a hand up. What would you like?
Well, the other thing I was going to mention, just as far as things that we are involved with engaging in terms of what some of the legislative issues coming before us is not just about water quality, but also about access to that water. Because we have, both on a legislative level, we have seen some efforts to take public lands out of public hands. So we have been vocal in trying to make sure that those public lands stay in public hands, so we have equal access for everybody. And then on a smaller scale, more practical level, we have provided money and labor to boat launches so that we can get more people into that water and things like that. But I just want to make sure that in addition to the science-based issues to keep cold water healthy for fish and the other things that live there, we also want to make sure that all of us folks have continuing access to those spaces.
That's a big deal, and it's a big reason why a person might want to become involved in Trout Unlimited.
It's a very big deal. It seems like every time you think that public land sale issue goes away, it tends to pop up again. And so I think that's I appreciate John bringing that up, because that's something that we've been really engaged with this past year. And I just saw it read in the news this morning, a survey that was done out of a university in Colorado that said, looked at the eight interior Western states, and the number of people that don't want public lands to go away, the percentage is somewhere in the 80s, 85, 86% or something like that. It was amazing, because that's even increased from what it had been a few years back. And obviously, as there's more and more of us around recreating, having the ability to get out and do that it's really valued, and it's certainly valued in a place like Idaho. So
yes, it is. Why do you think the issue of selling off public lands comes up again and again? I know that's kind of a rhetorical question, but go ahead and answer it.
Well, one of the things I'll mention on that line is I just got done reading a book called This American Land of Ours. Highly recommend. But one of the sad parts of that book is that what we're experiencing now was experienced in the 40s. And it's like you said, you know, you think you have won this battle, if you will. You think you have secured this access, and then all of a sudden you're kind of right back to where you started, sort of thing. So we got to fight the battle again. But yeah, like I said, it is one of those things that the public overwhelmingly supports as far as keeping public lands. And I think the only reason that we really hear it, where some of that land might be transferred, is because there are certain industries that want to increase their level of extraction from some of those public lands. So
the other side of that too is just development and people seeing opportunities to house people where they don't see opportunities elsewhere. Well, this is vacant land, so what's the problem? And of course, for the vast majority of those vacant lands, they have value to us as fish and wildlife habitat, as places to go hiking or hunting, fishing, horseback riding, riding your motorcycle, even. I mean, a lot of things that people do. I think in general, I would say my experience in working with the public on these types of issues for four decades is that we may not all agree on how we want them managed or how we want to use them, but we can all agree that we want to be able to fight over that and have the public lands to do that.
Right, so, and not just start chipping away at public lands until it's a really, really big fight.
Yeah.
I agree.
One of the more nuanced aspects of that, too, is that there is those who say, okay, we want to keep it in public hands, but we don't want those public hands to be federal. We want them to be state. And the unfortunate part of that is, here in Idaho at least, there is certainly a history of when land becomes state land, it often then sometimes becomes sold off. Whereas as long as it's federal hands, it's less likely for that to happen. I see benefits to both. I mean, would we expect local land managers to have a better idea of what to do? Quite often, yes. But the land is obviously more secure for public access.
I think one of the really neat things that's been going on in the last 2 to 3 decades, really now, with public lands is the collaborative approaches that are being taken, and they're largely locally driven. And we've got great examples, even in the panhandle of Idaho, on how people who come from things from different, instead of fighting over it, they're figuring out where their common ground is and coming up with solutions. And I think that's a model that it remarkably has works even when things seem pretty polarized at the start. So hopefully that will continue to be a model that's used, and we'll have the public lands to use that model on.
Yes, fingers crossed, and Trout Unlimited, keep on keeping on working on it and supporting that. Well, I think it would be good to take a minute and just talk about the national versus the local involvement of Trout Unlimited. They have different roles. And interestingly, this chapter is kind of active in some areas where national is also active. But let's talk about these
things. Yeah, we're really fortunate here in that we have some local Trout Unlimited staff who are funded through... I just mentioned collaboration. They're funded through largely collaborative processes that have freed up money to do restoration of fish and wildlife habitat. they're local. We have two full-time people right here in Sandpoint, Aaron Plew and Kathy Gidley. And Aaron's also happens to be the state director for Trout Unlimited. So yeah, we're kind of joined at the hip there, and I think it's a great thing. We talk often about a one Trout Unlimited approach, so that nobody's working at odds with one another, and leveraging each other's positions and places to try to do the things that Trout Unlimited does.
Sorry, Chip, I'm just going to close a door. We've got some pounding. There we go. Listeners, bear with us. There's some construction going on downstairs, and we're going to try to minimize that for us all. All right, go.
Yeah, ahead. So I think that's a pretty cool thing, and I really appreciate the opportunity to interact, and I think it's also helped us interact at a state council level, that we're more a player now than we have been in maybe recent years. So that's pretty neat. The other thing is we actually have another employee who's a contract employee, but she's funded through Avista to do bull trout education, which is within the larger Trout Unlimited mission, but she's not a national person. But we got a lot going on, and it all fits with the one TU, and it does tear down off of the Trout Unlimited mission that starts from the top down.
Yes, and you mentioned a state meeting, and that happens for all the local chapters in the state to get together and talk about what they're doing and learn.
Yeah.
Will you be at that? Who goes to that, Chip?
I attended the last one, and I think that was last fall that I attended that. And it was good to get caught up. I had worked with a number of those. It was nice to see some old faces from places I'd worked around the state. So there are people I've known for many years. It's interesting. Some chapters are super well organized and getting lots of stuff done. Some chapters are kind of in a rebuilding or a building mode. But I think that there's at least enough of a dialogue amongst those different chapters within the state that they can start to lean on each other a little bit. And that's what the state council's for.
And then the folks who go to that council come back to their local chapters and talk about what was discussed, and it helps you all have a...
Yeah, I mean, if somebody's doing something down in southeastern Idaho that we go looking at, well, maybe we ought to do that, or vice versa. I think that those kinds of things, and if it's some of them, sometimes you can interact and find out, how did you get there from here, because we haven't figured that out. And so they can help you crack the nut sometimes.
Yeah, and a great time to just get together with other folks with the same philosophies. Well, go ahead, John.
That might be something, too, like when you look at the different missions, if you will, of clubs or chapters. Some are probably predominantly social and predominantly about telling fish stories. And others may predominantly be about doing conservation work. And I think that our chapter kind of has a healthy balance of both. We like to do both of those things.
Yeah, the chapter has good camaraderie, and maybe we'll take a second and speak to your interest in growing your membership.
Okay, yeah, that is something we're interested in doing. I think, you know, there are a lot of people that like to fish for trout. For every decade, the Fish and Game Department used to do surveys of what's your favorite species to fish for? And trout are always at the top of the list in Idaho. and so, obviously, to have good trout fishing, you need to have advocates for trout habitat and advocates for things that make trout fishing good. And TU provides an opportunity to do that. And the mission statement of the organization speaks directly to that. And so... But the more members we have, the more folks we can hopefully tap to help us get things done and provide support when it's needed, even if it's just dropping an email to a legislator on a hot topic issue that is going to affect cold water fisheries.
And by being a member, they'll know about that, because they'll either find it discovered in a newsletter.
That's one of the things we're working on, is trying to increase our ability to and availability through outreach. We've been working with Aaron on getting a web page going. That takes work, and right now we don't have a volunteer that's the webmaster. So we'd like to get to a point where that web page is pretty regularly updated and where we can get things out. So that's a place I think I see a lot of room for improvement, but a place I think that we have opportunities.
Yeah, it sounds great. And there is the newsletter, so big stuff comes along through that.
Yep.
And we do have a webpage that's pretty informative. If you wanted to go to it, if you do a search for Panhandle Chapter Trout Unlimited, it'll pop right up there at the top. And if you did that same search on Facebook, we have a pretty active Facebook page, so you can see some of the things that are going on and giving more information. The other thing, too, when we're talking about increasing membership, we talk about sending out letters to some of these legislative topics that are going on. Currently, we have, about 350 active members, I think, is the number.
Less than that, but it's about 300.
But
good number.
But and that's it. So when a letter comes out, it's not a letter coming out from one person. It's a letter coming out that's representing in this area a fairly large number of people. So it has a little bit of weight behind it. And, of course, the more memberships that are there, the more that does carry.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd say about the web page and Facebook page is our contact information is on that. I know I received, it's not all the time, but I periodically receive emails from folks I've never met before asking questions about what are we doing, when do you guys meet, what's going on over here, and we're always happy to answer those. So if you got questions, that's a place to find us to ask them.
To reach out or attend a meeting.
Yep.
The public is welcome to the board meetings. Mm-hmm.
Or to sign up and volunteer for boots on the ground projects when those are going on.
That's right. Well, speaking of boots on the ground projects, et cetera, what are some of the things you're talking about for 2026? What might be happening?
So John alluded to a project along the Kootenai River, and that would be teaming up with the
Idaho Trails Association.
Yes, which Julie is also involved. It's a one-day work trip to do trail maintenance and improvements, and it's along the Kootenai River. It's up off the river a little bit, but at least you can think about catching fish while you're working, doing a good thing. We're hoping to find some opportunities working with Kathy on the projects that she's implementing stream restoration-wise down in the Coeur d'Alene Basin. And we've been approached about possibly doing a beaver reintroduction project, which would be really fun. We still need to bounce that off the Fish and Game Department, and I think it's already been bounced off Forest Service informally. So having done a couple of those in the past, they're pretty fun, they're interesting, and they actually do some really good things for trout. So
wouldn't that be a fun
one to attend?
Go ahead, John.
These are not going to be parachuting beavers.
No, probably not. We don't have a plane, but if somebody has a hot air balloon or something, they can take that up.
And if you're not familiar with that story, I do a little Google on YouTube for parachuting beavers. Yes. That was an attempt early on in Fish and Game's efforts to get beavers spread.
A successful attempt.
Very successful, yes. And it's a cute little film as well. I'll mention as well that I know one of the other summer projects that's going on, somewhat locally at least, is just across the border in Montana at Rattlesnake Creek, which is a place that a lot of local people here like to go fishing, but there's going to be, it's a very small scale, but old, not used anymore dam that's going to be coming out over there. And when I asked if they needed volunteers, I said, I would love to be the one to push the plunger, because that sounds like it'd be really fun, blow something up. But they said, no, they have to have the professionals do that. But after that, then there probably will be volunteer needs to revegetate, to do some revegetation along that section of a creek. But that is a real popular fishing spot for a lot of folks. That's something that'll be happening some point this summer.
Yes, and hopefully improve the habitat as time goes by.
So we're always looking for projects we can turn people onto, and then we'll be looking for people to turn onto the projects. So.
That's right.
And it is amazing how resilient fish populations are. when dams come out in, and this is like a small scale dam, this one should not be a controversial thing in any way, shape, or form. But shortly after dams like this are taken out, like within a year, fish populations return. They are very resilient to these projects when they happen.
It is amazing, right? They're true success stories.
They are, and they are incredibly resilient. It's amazing what they can come back from. Doesn't mean we should push them to the brink, but it's
amazing. We don't need to test it, but it is amazing. Well, those sound like some interesting projects that might come along, and I would guess some others too. There's a big education component here in the local Panhandle chapter. Let's talk about some of those things.
Yeah, so I mentioned briefly, Amy Anderson is our contract employee who administers the Trout Unlimited portion of the bull trout education and enforcement program that's funded through the settlement for the hydropower projects on the Clark Fork River with Avista. And that's in partnership with Idaho Fish and Game. They do enforcement and education and with Montana Fish, Wildlife and Parks, who also do enforcement and education. Amy strictly does education. Does a great job of it. She has a lot of fun doing it. She ropes us in to do some of that as volunteers, and it's fun. It's always neat to get kids in a creek exploring and learning about things, and it's pretty rewarding when at the end of the day they tell you something that you weren't sure they really picked up. So
yes, and especially our creeks with their native fish.
Yeah,
the bull trout and the
we've got some great places. Trestle Creek's one of those that that is really well suited to that when the kokanee are up spawning. So last year I helped out with Bill Love and Bob Holman on, they had the tribal school come over from Usk, Washington, and it was really enjoyable.
It is pretty fun to watch kids looking at bright red fish in a creek that look like they're looking into like a fishbowl or something. They get excited. Yeah,
they do.
One of the other educational things that we've done for the last couple of years as well is teaching people to fly fish. And so we've had classes. They usually are a 3 or 4 weekend sort of thing, or Saturdays, I should say, just one day, where part of that is classroom, part of that is in the field. But learning fly casting, learning fly tying, learning about the macroinvertebrates, which are those little creatures living in the water that when you tie a fly, that's what you're trying to mimic. So that the fish will come up to it. And there's information on the dates on all those things if you were to look at either the Facebook page or the website. Yeah. But those have been pretty well received.
And you help out with the fifth graders, or have, out at Waterlife Discovery.
Yeah, and I think this year we're not going to be able to do the course we did last year because we couldn't get the space to do it. But we are going to do the work with the local Master Naturalist chapter over at the Waterlife Discovery Center with the school kids. So, so we're still engaged in teaching fishing as well as teaching about fish.
Yes, and the veterans benefit from Trout Unlimited. Yes, they have. There was a veteran last year. There was a veteran fly casting opportunity. Was it maybe 2 years ago? Yeah, maybe before you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I wanted to mention that I interviewed the Master Naturalists last week about their program schedule for 2026, and there was a rumor that the incredibly small but full of huge fish pond at the Discovery Center may be going to be enlarged a little. Have you heard that rumor?
I haven't heard that rumor yet, but it's a nice one. They would know better than I now, because that's kind of their home base.
Yes, it is. But wouldn't that be fun if that pond got a little bit bigger and had greater access for kids that are learning to cast and maybe hook one?
And part of my understanding is it would be great if that pond also had a little more cover, because I'm told that those fish that are in there are sitting ducks for the osprey and a few other things.
It's all part of nature, John.
That's right.
They got to eat too.
That's for sure. Well, are there any other projects or just bits of information that you feel would need to talk about this morning? Are we coming to an end, guys?
I think some of these projects, of course, are things that are in the works. Some are, we have a set date for the trail project is Saturday, September 19th. and contact us if you want to sign up for it. But you could also sign up through the Idaho Trails Association webpage.
Or come to the Fly Fishing Film Tour this Friday, where there will be a sign-up sheet for that projects and other projects that people might be interested in.
And now, get your free TU membership while you're at it.
You know, it's a good deal all around, isn't it? A free membership that more or less, your ticket to the film more or less buys you an annual membership if you don't have one yet. That's wonderful. And it's nice to have encouragement to sign up for volunteer projects and get an idea of who might be joining you on that day. And so you would get an idea that day of who else might be thinking about doing it. And September 20th, that's going to be a beautiful day.
Well,
19th or 20th.
One would hope, yes.
First day of fall, the air will be crisp. You'll be out snipping branches,
et cetera. Don't jinx it.
Right. Better not jinx it. That's right. Well, guys, because the topic today, again, is the film festival, let's have the basic summary of those details one more time. John?
This Friday, February 27th, starting at 7 o'clock. It's the FT3, or Fly Fishing Film Tour. A collection of short films, always entertaining. Some successful fishing trips and some not so successful fishing trips, but always a lot of fun to watch them. Doors will open at 5:30. Lots of people always say, what should I bring? Well, you should bring money.
And yes, that's be cash, right? I mean, cash. It's not a credit card kind of situation. Is
cash
it?
For chip, Venmo for some of you others.
Okay. Cash for chip. But Venmo is a method.
Be an option.
All
yes.
Right. That's great.
And that is so that you can, again, support these efforts we've been talking about by buying raffle tickets or by bidding on the silent auction items. So, lots of opportunities there to support the work of Trout Unlimited, both with making cold water fisheries better here and overall helping with habitat restoration in that panhandle.
That's right. And go ahead and save yourself some time and get your ticket online, panada.org.
Correct.
Yes, or North 40, you said.
Yep, the fly. Okay. The House of Fly at North 40 will
bring your happy
them.
Face.
That's right.
You'll have it on by the time you get there.
For sure. And bring your fly fishing stories or trout fishing stories, because you'll run into a lot of like-minded folks at that at that event.
But no exaggerating.
Oh,
no exaggerating.
Yeah,
no,
right.
No.
No fish stories, right? Just fish stories.
All right. Well, I think we've had a great talk, guys. And with that, I'm going to conclude. I'd like to thank you, Trout Panhandle chapter of Trout Unlimited, also an underwriter here at KRFY. Thanks for joining us this morning, and I hope that this helps you get a great big turnout for Friday.
Thanks, Julie.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
You bet. Thank you very much.